Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody.
It's that time of the week, everyone. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. Kevin, I'm going to just tell you this very, very quickly because I think I'm going to need help. So I got home. We just had rehearsal for Spamalot, which is at 54 Below this Sunday, May 6th.
Thank you. Good
7
luck.
O'clock and 9:30. Thank you.
Nice job. Wait, what time?
7 o'clock and 9:30.
On Sunday.
On Sunday, May 6th. So please come out and come support. Anyway, long story short, I got home and I was like, oh, I'm starving, but I don't want to cook anything. So I went on to Grubhub. Kevin, guess what delivers to my apartment now?
What do you have there?
Do you see it?
Chicken fries.
From?
No. From Burger King.
Burger King now delivers to me.
So it's your favorite.
It's really my favorite. So we're going to have a lot of issues here.
Oh,
really,
dear God, Rob.
I'm really, this is not going to end well for anybody. So God
those
forbid.
Little guys are good. Those little guys. So full disclosure, everyone, when we were working on Merrily We Roll Along, we would sometimes occasionally go to Burger King.
Occasionally being every day.
Before rehearsal.
Every day before rehearsal. I would stock up on my fries, chicken fingers, and onion rings. So anyway, this is not pretty. Anyway, let's jump right in because I really want to eat my chicken sandwich before it gets cold.
We have much to talk about. Yeah.
We do. So let's start at the beginning. So as we know, this week, the Tony nominations were announced for the 2017-18 season. We are going to be discussing that, though, on a future broadcast when Tony Awards historian Brian Hobgood joins us again. So we will table the discussion on the nominations until our Tony week.
Right, when we all chat together we usually do.
Like we all do. But very quickly, though, did you get to watch the announcements on New York One, or did you read them?
I read about them. I read about, there's a couple names that were mispronounced. And
I was just going to say, Leslie Odom Jr. and Catherine McPhee, first of all, I mean, I don't, God bless them for waking up that early and doing it.
Well, that's why I didn't watch it live. You did, though, Rob.
I got up at 6:30 and I sat with a cup of coffee in front of the TV and watched her say, that it was Rodgers and Hammerstein's Carousel.
You say potato. I say Hammerstein.
You could say Oscar Hammerstein, or you can say it incorrectly, and they went the incorrect way. And at first, I was like, okay, well, you know what? She's maybe not really a theater person per se, so maybe she wouldn't know. And then Leslie Odom Jr. was like, and Rodgers and Hammerstein's Carousel. Mm-hmm. And then she had trouble with SpongeBob. But it reminded me, we talked about this on a previous broadcast, the Liz Taylor, when Liz Taylor would do award shows and she had no idea what anyone's name was and she just giggled herself through it. We've mentioned this once before, and if I can find it, we'll post it. But go to watch Catherine O'Hara do her Liz Taylor impression at an award show, which is kind of genius. Okay, so anyway, we're going to talk about that next week. But there's a lot of other stuff going on here that was happening this week and the week previously. And speaking of Tony Awards, it did not happen this year, but they're hoping it'll happen in future years, and that's a Tony Award for Best Ensemble.
Oh, yeah.
The Best Ensemble Tony Award. So, Kevin, we'll start right at the beginning, which is a very good place to start. What are your thoughts on giving a Tony Award for an ensemble?
Well, as someone who has been a member of many an ensemble, who wouldn't want that, as an ensemble? I would be – it's another category that I think is hard to quantify. And then do you give everybody a Tony? Is it like that?
Well, when you hear when I hear Best Ensemble, does that mean if the cast is 26 people, does that mean all 26 people get a Tony Award? Does it mean that anybody that's not a principal gets a Tony Award?
Is it Come From Away, where it's like an ensemble cast, or falsettos? Do they all get one, and then they also get another Tony because they were also the leading actor as well? Do you know what I'm saying, though?
I know exactly what you're saying. And is there going to be a Best Ensemble Play and a Best Ensemble Musical? Are they going to lump everybody together?
Good questions, Rob.
So I don't know how this is going to work. Are you opposed to seeing this category entered into the roster?
No comment until I understand the questions, because it's too many caveats. It's just
Well, I don't
that's
know.
Crazy.
I mean, you are a member of Actors Equity. I am not a member of Actors Equity, but I don't know if you saw on your website they put up an advertisement asking for or to remind people that come next year they would like to see a Tony Award for Best Ensemble. And I scrolled on the comments, more of them negative than positive. And the first comment was an Actors Equity member saying, "Please stop spending my dues money on this advertising."
That sounds exactly right. Yeah.
But then I also actually, you know, what was so nice was I saw a lot of actors say, before you give us this award, we'd like to see music directors get recognized.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. I think there's some prioritizing to be done, but Actors
you
Equity.
Know, it's tough because, okay. Yeah, no, go, I'm sorry.
No, no, please go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's tough because every part of this industry that's a part of a Broadway musical is proud of what they do and it's a craft. So I think it is understandable why everybody wants to be recognized for that. You know, music director, yeah, that makes sense. Like the music director's in charge of all the music. An ensemble, yeah, an amazing ensemble like of a chorus line or something. Or I can think of many ensemble shows that were extra special that you think. But I feel like it's more of a special Tony situation than an actual year-to-year ensemble
very
award.
Interesting. That's a really interesting point. Well, so we'll see. It's obviously not going to happen for this ceremony,
right.
But we'll see what happens in the future. So Actors Equity is pushing that. And another thing that Actors Equity is pushing is something that we had talked about last week, and that is the famed gypsy robe.
The robe.
Who wants to, for our listeners who might not be unaware, who wants to explain what the gypsy robe is? I feel like you should do it because you were in ensembles and you got to experience this.
Can't we just say go listen to last Thursday's episode?
No, we cut that part out.
Oh, we did?
We cut that part out.
I'm sorry, Bob, start again.
No, it's fine. I'm leaving it in now.
Oh, God damn it.
Now you're on the spot. So what is it? Who wants to talk about it?
The gypsy robe, the quick little two-sentence history, if I will try, is it's given at the start of every single
broadcast. Very quickly, would you be offended if I put the mic down and had a chicken tender while you gave this explanation?
As long as you actually do cut this out.
Please hold.
You're not going to cut it out.
No, keep going. I'm going to have my chicken tender. Keep going.
The gypsy robe, looks like a good – it's not a chicken tender, it's a chicken fry. he just made a face. The gypsy robe, it's in the 40s, 50s, early Broadway, the dancers and the singers, ensemble members would go from show to show, and they were often known as gypsies because they traveled from show to show. Eventually, in like the 40s, I think, 1947 around then, Rob, you would know, they started to celebrate the person who was in – well, now it's the person who was in the most Broadway shows. And so it's awarded at the start of every Broadway show, at the opening, backstage before the show starts, and it's a whole ceremony, and it's a special thing to honor the person who's like survived the longest in the business, really, in many ways, and it's really special, and it's a very positive, happy thing. And now there is talk that the moniker Gypsy Robe is offensive, to which I say. Head scratch a little bit, but I will understand if I could just read some more information on it, but I just haven't read enough that convinces me.
So as of this point, you think the name should stay the Gypsy Robe?
I think so.
Until you see evidence that says otherwise.
Are we offending like a Romanian community that like it, that was in the ensemble of Bajur and
It's so funny. I had a lunch with Walter Marx a couple of weeks ago who wrote Bajur.
Just drop that one, Rob. Yeah, wow.
It's not really.
By the way, guys, he wrote the music to Bajur.
It's also not an impressive name drop when you have to explain who the person's name is that you're dropping, by the way. So I don't know.
I would say 10% of our listeners know who he is.
So Walter Marx wrote Bajur, and he also wrote Golden Rainbow. He wrote the scores to both. But we were talking, and 40%. And I said, I really love Bajur, and I hope it's something that like gets done at some point in like in an encores type setting. And he goes, oh no, he goes, we can't do that show anymore. It's all about gypsies, and you're not allowed to say gypsies anymore. So he was very, which is so
very
funny.
PC. I guess we have to. But what about the musical Gypsy?
Well, it's going to be called Rose, which is what it should have been called from the fucking beginning. Should have been called
Rose.
Do you
think they'll change it? Do you think they'll change it?
No.
All right.
I'm making a slight.
That was funny. That was good.
A very slight joke. But what I find so interesting in this debate is, and like, you know, I'm like, I am not part of a gypsy tribe, so I cannot speak of who should be offended and who shouldn't be offended, because those are not the shoes that I walk in.
Right.
But Patrick Page, who currently right now is starring in St. Joan, and was fantastic in St. Joan. I'm surprised he didn't get a Tony nomination, but we'll talk about that next week. He, on his Facebook, was saying, he goes, so what happens when a member of Actors Equity says, I am Jewish and I'm offended how Shylock is portrayed in The Merchant of Venice? Does that mean that we stop doing The Merchant of Venice? And he gave a whole bunch of analogies. And so it's I don't know where this is going. And then I'm going to dovetail. So we will keep you updated as the gypsy robe thing comes in, but please let us know how you feel about it, because we'd like to hear, you know, both pro and con signs on both of the arguments. But because things are getting a little bit more heightened now, or heated, I should say, about what is happening in this community, that also leads to the next topic I wanted to discuss, which is West Side Story.
Wow, you're really hitting it tonight,
well,
Rob.
You know,
with
we're trying,
these issues.
Kevin, you said you'd like to be topical, and now we're going to be topical. So I'm sure, as our listeners know, they were doing a concert version of West Side Story in London, and for the role of Maria in this concert, they cast Sierra Boggess, best known as Ariel in The Little Mermaid, that was on Broadway. And there was a backlash saying that she was not Hispanic, she was not Latina, so she should not have accepted the role, nor should she have been offered the role of Maria. And after, I believe, a week and a half or so, finally Sierra pulled out and said, because it was a concert, I thought this would be okay, and obviously it isn't so. I'm so sorry, and, you know, good luck. And a lot of people, there was a couple of arguments. One was good for her. She, you know, she made the right call. The other half was saying she shouldn't have accepted it to begin with. Where are we on this? Where are we on this? Should we have?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really care. I mean, I think she did it. I think it was fine that she did it the way she did. But I, you know, but if I'm not of that community, so I can't, I was not offended. I didn't really, it wasn't on my radar, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, sure.
I didn't really know about it.
It came out of nowhere.
Yeah. And so, to be perfectly honest, I thought the fact that she issued a statement about it, and I thought, whatever. It's like, come on. Show business is such a small little, like, you know, I mean, it's great that the show is getting done, and I'm glad that it is, should be a Latina in that show, definitely. But I think the way it was handled was fine.
My feeling is this. I do not think she should have been offered the role, but I don't think people should be angry at her. She's a working actress who needs to pay her rent and feed herself. So my feeling is this should never have been her decision to make in the first place. The producers and casting directors from the beginning should not have even offered this to her and put her in that position, because it's very hard to turn down work. And I don't think it's her responsibility to be the moral compass of the world or the moral compass of this production.
Oh, sure. I mean,
so
yeah,
I
will say this, though.
Yes.
West Side Story can be done by opera companies, and the rules are completely different with opera companies. You have people in Yellowface. You have people, it is a different world. So if there are opera people in West Side Story, then I can understand why they would have, you know, they would break those rules, because it was a Royal Albert Hall. I mean, that's could be like an opera presentation. I don't know. If there were other opera people in the cast, then I would find it interesting. But
well, sorry.
No, that's it.
I was going to say, yeah, I think your argument is valid, because only recently have they stopped having Othello's in blackface.
Oh, that's right.
And that's recent. That's like within the past 2-3 years that's changed. Okay, so more on that anon. And then finally, before our favorite things, Kevin, in the court systems, we have To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, my God. I don't.
Are you following this or no?
No, not at all.
So Scott Rudin commissioned Aaron Sorkin to write a stage adaptation of To Kill a Mockingbird, directed by Bart Scheer, and it was going to star Jeff Daniels and Celia Keenan-Bolger. And the Harper Lee Estate is now saying that Scott Rudin and Aaron Sorkin violated the contract because it's drastically changing the character of Atticus Finch. They've taken it to court because Scott Rudin has said, hey, this lawsuit is making us lose investors. And the court said to Scott Rudin, we need to see what the intended intention is of the character of Atticus Finch. So you have 15 days to videotape a reading of the production. So within 15 days, Scott Rudin and
Wonderful.
Folks need to videotape a production of their version of To Kill a Mockingbird and submit it to a judge.
That's crazy.
Which I think somehow what's happening behind the scenes might be more interesting than what we eventually see on stage.
Yeah.
So
well, it is going to go to court. It is going to court.
It's in court. It's in court because Scott Rudin is saying, he goes, this is hell, this is preventing investors from investing in this show.
Well,
so we shall see. Now,
praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
There we are. Now we're all caught up in contemporary issues. We feel really good about ourselves, and now we're going to go jump back into the past.
Get a chicken finger.
Without our favorite things. So what should I eat my chicken finger? Because you're going to go first, or shall I go first?
Oh, I feel like I'll go first, so you can eat your chicken finger.
Oh, is it because I did a lot of talking?
No. Okay. I thought you might want a chicken finger right now, you know?
Well, I always want
Because you were talking.
I always want a chicken finger.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to have a little bite. I'm putting the mic down, but I'm still listening. Because you watch, you see me. So you see that I'm going to...
All right, okay. But you're going to guess this. But I think you're going to know right away. But it's a book. I'm surprised that we haven't talked about it yet. And I think I mentioned it to you the other day, but it's one of those books that was on my shelves for years and years and years, and I never really read it. And then I finally read it, and I thought, why has this been waiting there for so long?
Is this that Artist Way bullshit again?
No. It's literally been years.
Just very quickly, any artist who tells me about The Artist Way looks like the most uptight, frazzled person I've ever seen in my life. And they're like, you got to read The Artist Way. It changes your life. And I'm like, you all look so – it's like people who do yoga. They are like, they're like, oh, it's very peaceful and very zen. I'm like, why are you speaking through a clenched jaw at me? So I don't understand the point of The Artist's Way, but that's not what you're talking about. So then I'm going to shut up about it. So go ahead.
It's an autobiography.
An autobiography. Okay.
Uh-huh. And it's a legendary director and playwright. You're going to know right away.
A legendary director and playwright.
Of which a film and play has been written based on this book. He wrote often with another fella.
Is this Act One?
Yeah.
Do you know I've never read it?
Oh my gosh!
I've seen I saw the play that James Lapine did a few years ago.
Oh, I want to buy it for you. It is my book was falling apart, so I had to throw it out. I was like literally as I read a page, the page would fall off. It was an old paperback. It is a very special book by Moss Hart. He wrote it in 1959. He was probably in his 50s when he wrote it. It is a reflection on the first half of his life, basically his childhood, which was very impoverished in New York City childhood, up until he wrote his first successful collaboration with Moise Kaufman. I mean, Kaufman and Hart, as everybody knows them today. And this book, first of all, what's fascinating to me is that it is a book that is clearly dated. I mean, you know that you were in the early 1900s and you can feel that and sense that. But the problems that he goes through, the struggle he has as an artist trying to find his way, just the struggles he is as an adolescent, are all very, very relatable, especially to people like us who are in the arts, who very much had a childhood like that as an adolescent. You go through his childhood working summers in the upstate, not the Catskills, but up in the Adirondacks at those old camps, like or Vermont, the Green Mountain. And he was one of those like camp counselors, like Jack Cassidy in Wish You Were Here. And so he would put on skits and all of that, and he became a playwright. And the book really celebrates his struggles and how he found success out of every single failure that he had in his childhood and his upbringing. And you really get a bird's eye view of what the business was like on Broadway back then. And I mean, I had when he's a kid and he's comes downstairs, can you get a real understanding of what Kaufman was like and how his kind of his neuroses. And they come down from writing and there's all these all the most famous theater people are in the having tea, and he's like, you know, 20, and it's just I had chills. Like he paints such a vivid picture of what it's like to be a part of show business and how proud he is, and because he was reflecting on this some 20, 30 years later. I it's a fascinating quick read. It's actually a page turner in many ways. And I think you got to read it, Rob. And I think our listeners should definitely pick up a copy. I've not seen the play, so I didn't, and I actually haven't seen the movie either. And I would like to see the movie because I really enjoy this. The story is just, it's riveting. And yet it's just this guy's life. And it's just, it's like with the people we interview, Rob, you know, it's, they say, well, I just got lucky in this one time, but I was ready for it. I was prepared and I worked my butt off, but it just was this one opportunity. And this book shows you the inside view of that opportunity.
Oh, that's so fascinating. That's really, really interesting. I mean, the play, I liked the play. And I didn't even know there was a movie version of this. Do you know who's in the movie by any chance?
1962. I think I didn't write it down.
Oh, no, that's okay. I didn't even know there was a film version of this. So I'm.
Yeah, 1963. Okay. Yeah.
Which is so funny because I'm a huge fan of the Kaufman and Hart plays.
Yeah. And you got to, Rob, it's so fascinating because as a director, you see how they created these plays because they really go through how they drafted them and they would stay up all night and it wasn't right. And how one play that was so successful was such a failure because the fourth act was all messed up. And it's just the fourth act.
Tears
that they went through to change the formula of what a play was on Broadway. Act one, an autobiography by Moss Hart. Dun, dun, dun.
Can I borrow your copy?
It's gone. I told you.
Okay.
Dust in the wind. It was literally a paperback book that was falling apart, and the binding was so gone that every time I turned a page, it was falling out.
Okay, then maybe you can read it to me on a book on tape. Could you put it as a book on tape and just read it to me?
Can you imagine?
I would love to hear you read me a book on tape.
No, you don't want that.
Okay, well, fine. Maybe you'd like my favorite thing then instead of a book on tape.
Bring it. Nice, good segue as he takes a sip of his Diet Coke.
Oh, my God, man. The fact that Burger King now delivers, I've been trying to lose weight, and this is not going to do it.
This episode should literally be
sponsored by Burger King. Every day is a cheat day. A cheat day turns into a cheat month, which turns into a cheat year, which is going to turn into a cheat lifetime. A couple of things here. So I'm going to be talking about a CD today.
Yeah.
An album, per se.
Ooh.
So a
cast album?
No. So I'll give you a little history on this. So as you know, a couple of weeks ago, Kevin and I did Alice in Wonderland in concert, the 1985 horrible television movie, which is, if you've never seen that, that should be a favorite thing at some point.
Rob making a stage acting singing appearance, just to put that out there, everybody. And he was amazing and so freaking funny. Continue.
Oh, shucks, Kevin. I'm blushing. So anyway, I sang a song called The Lion and the Unicorn, and I did it brilliantly.
Awful.
And
it's going to be
all the kids are going to sing it for showcase this year, so get ready. Wait a minute. I just got an email from you. Did you send me an email while I'm talking to you?
No.
I said you accepted an invitation from me.
Well, I accepted that, John Lee Beatty. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, great. I was like, are you listening to me, please? I can tell that you're doing work.
It pops
work.
Up in like the corner.
Okay. We're fine. So the number was a duet, and my scene partner was a gentleman by the name of Steve Tipton, who, if you listen to the Theater People podcast or Broadway Backstory or True Crime Obsessed, Steve is the husband of Patrick Hines.
Shout out Patrick Hines. Hi, Patrick.
Who's the mastermind and genius of so many wonderful podcasts. So anyway, I just said to Steve, I said, oh, yeah, you know, I do a podcast as well. And he goes, oh, great. So he's also loves old Broadway the same way we do. And he wrote me a really long email talking about some of his favorite things. And one of these favorite things is something that I was like, oh, I don't even know about this. So this is a Steve Tipton suggestion, and I think it's wonderful. It is an album. It is available on Amazon and iTunes and Apple Music. By the way, I cannot stress enough, if you do not have an Apple Music account, get an Apple Music account, because for $9.99 a month, all of the J Record catalog is on there. All of the Columbia thing is on. I mean, literally, all those. Remember all those old cabaret CDs we used to make fun of that was like featured in Show Magazine, where it was like some guy with like bleach tips and like Karen Mason.
Lee Lessig.
Yeah, Lee Lessig. Oh my God. Yeah. All of Lee Lessig's CDs are on there. And like Karen Mason singing into a blow dryer, like Hair Today, Belt Tomorrow, whatever the fuck it was called, or some shit like that. Anyway, it's all on there. So this CD is on there as well. It is not in that category. It's in a different category. And this is the solo show debut, the debut solo show of a Broadway legend. And it's the first time she's ever doing a cabaret. And she recorded it in 2000. At Joe's Pub, and the reason I listened to it was Steve said to me, he goes, I think it's the most perfect example of a cabaret structure out there. It's the perfectly structured cabaret. And I listened to it, and I have to agree with him wholeheartedly. This is a wonderful album. It's from 2000, recorded at Joe's Pub, and the album is called...
Yes, I'm on the edge of my seat!
Faith Prince, A Leap of Faith. It's called Faith Prince, A Leap of Faith, and it's everything. It's not only Faith singing, but it's also her patter as well. And thank God they kept it all in, because the patter is really absolutely hysterical. So first of all, if you don't know Faith Prince, Kevin talked about her a little while ago on Guys and Dolls Off the Record. She was a really a workhorse of a... Are you adding it?
It's on Spotify, yeah.
It's on Spotify, great.
Yeah.
A workhorse of an actress who really made a splash in Jerome Robbins Broadway, and then that led to her being Adelaide in the 1992 Guys and Dolls revival, which sort of catapulted her to a higher plane. Since then, she did Little Me, and then... Right. Okay, cool. So we all know who she is at this point. So it's her at Joe's Pub in 2000 with the wonderful Alex Rybak as her music director, and it is such a good cabaret album, but her stories are genius, not to mention the songs that she covers. She starts off with Some People, and then she does, she does a couple of things that I like. She does Wish You Were Here, which I think is great. She does Maltby and Shire's Autumn. And two
second
songs.
Wish You Were Here reference in one.
I know that's going to be the thematic tie-in for us. No.
There you go.
Then one of the things that I love that she does on the, and one of the things, sorry, I'm like so excited about this album. I need to calm down.
I love it.
Take a breath. One of the things that I love that a lot of these cabaret artists do is they shine a spotlight on composers or shows that never necessarily got their due. And we had this gentleman on the show, Larry Grossman. She sings two Larry Grossman songs, and both with lyrics by Alan Fitzhugh. One is called I Do What I Can With What I Got, which was from Paper Moon. Mm. And then the other one is this amazing song called Animal in the Pit. And it's like this 6-minute number about a woman going through a divorce in Mexico. It is the weirdest fucking song I've ever heard of in my life. And it is absolutely amazing. Excuse my language. There is a story in here. I kind of want to tell you the story, but I don't want to spoil her version of it. She was doing On a Clear Day You Can See Forever at the Sacramento Music Circus.
Gotta love it.
With Jack Jones, the crooner. Jack Jones, who you love, right?
I have records of his. I mean, I appreciate his crooning, you know. Yes. He could croon.
Oh God, I'm not going to tell you this story because I want you to listen to the album. I just
found a live one. I found a live one from 2013 also.
Okay, so the only thing I'm going to tell you is all you need to know is the story about Jack Jones is that he could not He couldn't memorize lyrics. He couldn't memorize anything. So they were about to do Come Back to Me. And the way she says it is, she goes, if you know this song, come back to me. She said, it's a list of modes of transportation for Daisy to come back to him.
Right.
Take a train, take a car, take a bus, take a boat. And one of the lyrics that just really screwed him back was like, come back on a mule. A mule. And he couldn't remember this song. So she said, he made the stage manager in glow tape. Right, huge on the turntable, mule, spell it out in glow tape. And she's like, the whole audience saw just Mule glowing the entire time. And she said we all had to act with this huge sign that said Mule in front of us. So she goes, it's time for the, it's opening night. It's time for the song. And it goes, ba-da-da-dum, da-da-da-dum, da-da-da-dum, da-da-da-dum. Intro, he doesn't sing. They're vamping. And then just start playing the song. And instead of take a train, take a car, it's just dead silence with the music. And all he would do is go, come back to me. Music. Bum, bum, bum. Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. Ba, 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 bum. Come back to me. He would only. And so she said, what happened afterwards? She said, what happened? And he said, I don't know. I don't know. She said, but it was written out there for you. She said, Mule is on the stage. And he goes, yeah, but the turntable is upside down. So all I saw was Elam.
No.
I'm so sorry that I gave that away. She tells it much funnier than I. But Elam and Jack Jones is one of the... I literally fell on the floor laughing. I think it's one of the funniest things ever. But one of the things I think is so impressive about her is she did not get success in musical theater and did not come to people's attention the way people do it now. I was at a showcase today. And it's so interesting to see that the way that people do it now is you have a show... If you're musical theater, you have a showcase. You then get an agent. The agent submits you. And then your career hopefully is launched. She literally had to play every single regional theater all across the country, every single summer stock all across the country.
Stories of her doing toilets and cutting her teeth.
It was her and Barbara Walsh, right?
Or Jim Walton. Oh, okay, yeah.
Or somebody. It was her and I think it was her, Jim Walton, and her and Barbara Walsh that literally would clean the toilets at Wagon Wheel together.
It was in an old podcast.
Yeah. So anyway, that sort of can-do attitude and that sort of positivity about the whole experience is really what I think makes this album special. So once again, it's a very long-winded, but
I'm excited about it.
And thanks to Steve Tipton for the suggestion. It's Faith
Thanks, Steve.
A Leap of Faith. It's from 2000, recorded at Joe's Pub. Once again, it's a really fantastic album, and it's on Apple Music, Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon.
And I'm looking at another one that she did called Total Faith from 2013.
Yes, I have not heard that one. But I think what's also so fascinating is throughout the whole album, she goes, this is my first time ever doing a cabaret. She sounds like she's been doing it for years.
Amazing.
And we keep trying to get her on the show, and eventually we'll do that and find a time in her schedule to make all that work. But we'll ask her about it. But it's a really wonderful album, Faith Prince, A Leap of Faith.
Good one. Good one. And check out mine, Act One, An Autobiography by Moss Hart, the book.
Amazing. Till next time.
Bye, everybody.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.